Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, it's your old pal Wilson. And we're bringing you the 12 Days of Richmas. Yeah, we went there. I'm sorry about that. These are the 12 most listened to episodes of 2023. Enjoy.
Insane in the Membrane.
Hello and welcome to another edition of your favourite podcast, Insane in the Membrane, with me, Rich Wilson. And this week I'm joined by the mighty Pierre Novelli. Hello.
Hey, man. How's it going?
Yeah, good, man. How are you? Not seen you for a while. You good?
Yeah, I'm okay. I've got that thing where you got a kind of spot inside your nose.
All right. Oh, no. Oh, that's, mate. Where
you can't see anything, but it's just like, fuck, and you keep forgetting.
Yes. I had it. It's always, I get them on the end. And you don't, like you say, you don't see them, and then suddenly you kind of, you're good like that, and it feels like being shot in the face.
Yeah. I think it's something to do with nose hairs.
It must be blocked follicles.
Maybe. It's got to be.
Yeah. So yours is up inside.
Yeah, but just around the edge of the cave.
Oh, yeah, and you can't even get up. Yeah, oh, God. Mm. Oh, man, I feel your pain. I'm sorry about that. That's horrendous.
You know, there are worse problems.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, I remember I had a bit of an ulcer up there for a while, and that wasn't fun. And then it would scab over, and then I'd go, oh, yeah, and I'd pick it, and then it would all go back to, and then it would just start again, and you just like, this circle of stupidity and pain.
It's a loop.
Because I like picking. I'm a bit of a picker. I always pick scabs and things.
I think if you have a massive scab in your nose, it's fair enough to try and get it out of there.
It was always kind of somehow. Like, it felt really good. And then as soon as I finished, like, oh, that really hurts, actually. And then, but I like that. It's like, it's why I watch Dr. Pimple Popper, things like that.
Oh, you're a fan of his?
Yeah, I love watching all that. I've seen a few recently. I don't know how squeamish you are. Sorry to anyone listening. But there's one, they've been fishing out like earwax that's been in there for like 10 years or wherever it was. And I'm like, how did you get it to that point? And they're like,
so
fishing it out. Like,
he's expanded. He's expanded his remit.
I think this is somebody else. I think Dr. Pimplepot has started this craze now where we're all like watching these weird things. Someone this morning, they got this lump on their shoulder. And as they were fishing it out, and they were like, oh, I wonder what this is going to be. And it was the end of like a 9mm cartridge just in his shoulder.
Oh, what?
That's how long you've been, isn't it? Yeah.
The earwax thing, though, I fantasize about getting my ears syringed. A friend of mine did it and said his hearing was like way too sensitive, like Spider-Man, for like 2 days.
Yeah. Suddenly you can hear people talking on planes as they fly over.
Yeah, exactly. But I'd be so upset if I went and did it and not much came out, and they're like, no, your sense that you have blocked ears is just you're just mental. You're wrong.
It's like when like colonic irrigation, people are like, oh yeah, well, you know, if you do that, you'll lose a bit of weight, you've got things all clogged up in your pipes and things like that. And I'd probably be one of those people going, no, your pipes are fine, they work perfectly well, your system is completely fine. There's nothing in there.
Yeah. It's something else.
It's something else.
Yeah, worst news.
It's not that. Anyway, bye.
Oh, man.
But so the last, so you've been on before, you were a guest before a couple mm-hmm. of years ago when we used to do it live in Camden in Comedy Central. Pierre, so much has happened to you since then. Having seen your show last year in Edinburgh, which I will say yeah. was fucking brilliant.
Oh, thanks, man.
Mate, it's been the roller coaster for you.
It's been an interesting year, yeah. and it is almost exactly a year ago now that if you're coming and seeing me on tour in autumn, spoiler alert, it doesn't really matter, but at the end of the show, I found out basically from an audience member the audience member said, "Oh, I have Asperger's. You seem like you have Asperger's." You don't say that now. You say ASD1, autism level 1, which is a bit silly, but whatever. Anyway, yeah, he said that, and I sort of thought it wasn't the first person in my life to ever suggest something like that. But in my defense, all of the other people who'd ever suggested something like that were just like real slaves to their emotions. Yeah. Really wet people. Very sensitive types. I was like, well, of course you think I'm like a fucking robot compared to you, you know?
Yeah.
Or whatever. So yeah, but no, he was right. I looked into it and by God, this guy, he was bang on.
But this is the thing, having spoken to you a few times over the years and, you know, having spent quality time in your company, yeah, I like the way, like we've had conversation, you'll go, well, yeah, of course you feel like that because of this, 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 and this. And you're able to set it out in front of everybody, which people, that's why people would go, as you know, people go, well, yeah, you're like a robot because you're able to go, bom, 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 and, you know, and it, so how did you, so when you went and, did you go and, when you got your diagnosis, did you feel a sort of sense of relief almost, or you weren't really aware of it before?
So I'd never really, because I had a guy with Asperger's at my school who was a friend of mine, and we were not very similar at all, at least initially. And what I didn't realize was that, like, there are core similarities but symptomatic differences, right? So okay. Basically, let's say there was some crazy problem that made you compulsively draw pictures of things you're afraid of, right? So that's what the condition is. But if you looked at it from the outside, you'd go, well, no, it's different because he's got a compulsion to draw spiders, whereas this guy has a compulsion to draw snakes.
Right. Yeah.
It's different. Or it's something else. It's a phobia thing. And it's like, no, they're both drawing their fears. It's just that they're different people, so it manifests differently.
Yeah.
So me and this guy who I knew from school with Asperger's are very similar, but not in ways that I realized at the time because the specifics were different.
Right. I've got you. Yeah,
and it's not quite 100% because you go, well, I don't have that, you know. And a lot of the wording was bad. So when I looked at these tests, one of the very common questions on these little tests you can do online is stuff like, do you hate hugging, you know, or physical intimacy? And I don't. I think hugs are great. But what the question should have been phrased as, I've now learned, is there a commonly accepted form of physical affection that you hate? And yeah, holding hands.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, I fucking hate holding hands. I think it's awful.
That explains why, the most, every time I've seen you, you won't hold my hand.
It's exactly, yeah, and I just hug you instead. I think holding hands is the most stressful fucking thing in the world. I just think it's awful.
Do you know what? Now you've said it, yeah. And especially, for example, my wife, who's much taller than I am, it's very, if we're going to hold hands, we have to hold hands in a certain way, whereas ordinarily, it's been like I sort of go over the top and then she's underneath. Now, because of her height, I have to come from underneath. And it feels alien because I've not done that before. And so to the point now, we don't really hold hands because it feels odd.
Well, yeah. And then I'd be in a position like that where I sort of go, what am I doing with my fucking hand? And what happens? What are the rules? What happens when someone comes the other way? We're in the way. This is rude, you know, getting stressed about it. When does it fucking end?
Oh, there we go.
We hold hands for 100 meters and then we stop.
I guess, yeah, you have to separate if people are coming towards you or people make allowances for the fact that they can see a couple coming towards them. And they kind of go, oh, I need to navigate around this rather than, although some people do barrage, do just go barreling through the middle.
Yeah, lampposts as well. That's a problem.
Oh, yeah.
Don't get me started.
It's a minefield.
Yeah, so if that question had just been properly phrased, I would have gone, oh, shit, yeah, definitely. Whereas instead I said, absolutely not. And, you know, cast the whole thing out. And the people's, including my own idea of what an autistic spectrum, I don't even know if, I don't know, you must know running this podcast, the language for this stuff changes fucking constantly.
All the time,
The official language is autistic spectrum disorder, but even then there are people online saying, oh, it's not a disorder, it's a condition, and that's less negative, so whatever.
But yeah.
Autistic spectrum thing, it's all very variable. I had no idea just how variable it can be. So you can have someone like me with a fairly sort of fortunate combination of stuff in many ways. Like I'm not, you know, I'm not nonverbal. I've been able to sort of socialize myself quite heavily. It hasn't gotten in the way of my career, although, you know, you never know how much it played a part in choosing your career. Whereas, like, there are people who are in some ways less on the spectrum than I am, but they have one of the biggies, like nonverbal really bad texture problems. So they can't wear almost any clothes apart from a specific type of fabric, or like those are kind of a much more of an everyday fuck you kind of problem than a lot of what I have.
Yeah. I think there's an element of that in a lot of people have something on a really mild level. Like my son, my youngest son, for example, for years struggled with like textures of food. Like he couldn't eat certain things. He just like, no, I can't touch that. It makes me feel weird.
I still have that with some stuff. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. 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 I have an almost like a completely pathological, unreasonable hatred of baked beans.
Do you know what? It's that it's a bit more common than you think. There's
a few people out there who have
people, for example, cannot be anywhere near mustard. Cannot
really?
I remember he came to dinner at mine and we were having hot dogs and I put all the condiments out. And he was just like, I don't want that fucking thing near me. Just fucking, he was so angry that I brought it up. In fact, I'll take his name out of this. I'll take his name out of this just in case. But he was so annoyed that I had the audacity to put mustard in front of him. And it
is funny.
Someone else I know is scared of oranges. They can't have oranges in the house.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff like that. And I think the thing is like, I found an explanation which was saying that like, okay, because even when you do these like numerical screening tests for autistic spectrum stuff, they still kind of have to pick a minimum score, right?
Right.
So it's out of like 240 or something. So they've gone for, okay, we'll start to look at you seriously a bit at like 60 out of 240. So that's when we start to, it becomes something worth looking at. So you have to pick a number. And that means that you could get like 55, right. You know, like you could be pretty close and have some stuff that gets you a pretty high score, but not enough to kind of really tip you over into the, and even if you score 60, your doctor might well say to you like, well, you know, you can, like, it just depends how much of it is a problem. Would this open anything up for you, in terms of like getting you access to something? Like you got to be practical about it, but, the best explanation I saw for it is that it's like a jigsaw. And we've sort of decided that out of all these pieces of this jigsaw, if you have 60 of the pieces or more, you can see the picture
right
in the jigsaw. But even if you didn't have enough pieces of the jigsaw, you might have enough of the important pieces.
Yes.
Corner bits or people's faces or something. That you go, no, even though you're still low, the stuff you have is important enough that it you still need more than a normal person would need, or neurotypical, whatever you're supposed to say. But like in the example I gave you with the texture thing, like even if that's your only thing, that's bad. You know, you can't necessarily wear a suit if you have to wear a suit to work or safety clothing.
Of course,
Yeah, I'm glad I don't have that one, the texture stuff, really. Well, with clothes, anyway.
Yeah. There are, it's people I know, like, they can't wear certain things. Just, and they don't even, they don't, like you say, they don't know why. someone else. Yeah, oh man, we could go on forever. There's someone else I know that can't bear to look at loose buttons, like a button hanging.
Buttons
up.
Is a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know where that comes from.
The thing is that like something I found out from doing some reading and from, because you know Fern Brady?
Yes.
So Fern got her autism diagnosed a few years ago and now has a very, you know, popular, best-selling, very good book out about it. And when she got her diagnosis, she tweeted about it. And I messaged her saying, oh, you know, congratulations or whatever, like that's good. And she did reply, to be fair, yeah, I think you do as well. Like immediately. And I was like, no, I just like history too much. But she was right. But she was telling me, and all the research as well, is that people tend to cluster.
Okay.
If you are neurodivergent. So like people with autism or ADHD tend to be friends. Like there's a really, really high pattern of it. And they're drawn to each other because they can deal with each other's shit. They understand it better. They're in the same type of jobs, heavily self-employed generally. So it could well be that almost everyone who we've met through doing comedy is one or the other.
I think that's the same with human beings the world over. We always gravitate towards our own group, don't we? And again, I said this before on here, I think one of the big things that we found difficult as comedians or performers was not that our gigs and our work had been taken away when we had the lockdowns. It was the fact that we'd lost our universe. We were kind of, we were separated from our group, which I found more, I think it caused more problems than we realized, you know, because we have a kind of silent understanding. When we see each other in green rooms, we kind of silently, subconsciously, like, I get you. You're me. I'm you.
That's right. And the whole point is that, like, that's why I'm never that worried about when a comedian is even actively rude, because I just remind myself, well, if you wanted it to be a fucking HR office environment, then you'd go work in an office. Like,
yes.
I kind of like the fact that I could be at work and in a green room and some person can be really fucking rude or off-putting or strange, and I could sort of go, oh, okay. Obviously, you know, within the bounds of the law. I don't mean unacceptable behavior, but just like completely socially fucking wacky. And I quite I quite like that. Oh, good.
I used to be the same. I used to be beside myself going, oh, fuck, I didn't say goodbye properly, or I said goodbye in a weird way, or I said that thing. And then, like you say, you kind of go, when someone else does it to you and you go, oh, yeah, of course, we're all doing the same thing. We're not, this isn't personal. This isn't, I'm not being a prick on purpose. It's just that my mind has been racing in all manner of directions and I just forgot to do that one particular socially acceptable thing, you know. And yeah, and like that, once you understand that we're all doing that, yeah, you do get a bit more, you do find more comfort around each other.
I think that's right.
Yeah, definitely. So how has it affected your everyday life? Is it?
I've done like, it's not so much an everyday thing in the sense of stuff like textures. I've got noise cancelling headphones. That's helped a lot.
Yeah.
I have a lot of sound issues, to be fair. That I do have. Well, like people chewing loudly and stuff and sniffing.
Do you know what? My wife, Kate, pulled me up on that the other day. I think because what's happened is I fucked my nose. I was in the tape. It's been fucked before. Someone else elbowed me years ago. But I fucked it again when I was in the Tate Modern down the bottom. And I was mucking around with my friend's kid. And we were racing, and because it's all concrete down underneath, I didn't. The pillar and the floor and the walls were all one color in my peripheral vision. When I said to him, "Right, let's go," and I ran full pelt into the pillar, and fucked my head up, and never got it. I never got it looked at because I'm a bloke, and so I left it to heal on its own. So now I have this weird, especially when I'm stressed, I sniff weirdly, and Kate said to me, she's like, are you all right? Because you're sniffing and I'm going to push you out of the car in a minute.
Well, exactly. But then see, if you told me, I realized that it does help to be more aware of this stuff in the sense that it makes it easier to deal with because you have an explanation for yourself.
Yes.
It's not an unknown. And unless it was really crazy, because you've told me that story now and I have an explanation in my head, I probably wouldn't mind it.
Got you.
Because I'd go, oh, okay. Whereas I think when someone is like chewing with their mouth open on a train or something like that, it's the lack of self-awareness.
Yes.
And it's that thing where I think it's one. It's that big David Foster Wallace speech, you know, This Is Water, where he says you have to imagine a good reason for that other member of the public for being a dickhead, basically. You just need to make up a reason. I do it all the time. So someone's chewing their mouth open. That one I find almost impossible to excuse. But then an example maybe would be you go, okay, they have had fucking nose surgery and they can't breathe if they don't chew with their mouth open a bit or whatever. Like, let's imagine that or whatever.
At some point, someone must have said to them, that is not how you eat. You have to eat with your mouth shut. And I think
you'd think.
It seems to be, I guess, the assumption that it's just a blatant disregard for everybody around you.
Yeah, there are rules, damn it, that you can't scream that in a train carriage, much as you would like to.
I would love to see that. Just you standing up, for fuck's sake, there are rules. There are rules to masticating on the train, you piece of shit. Then you shove all their stuff onto the floor.
Yeah, just take the food out of their mouth really quickly, like a ninja. Yeah. Oh man. It's been useful in the sense that like I never really knew what executive dysfunction was.
Okay. So what is that?
It's when you're sort of paralyzed by just your own brain, and there's no reason for you not just picking up that thing you just dropped, or there's no reason for you not to just sort out that problem right now, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Or just make the fucking toast and eat it. And you just don't. And there's no, you can't even really tell why you're not doing it. And you know you need to do it and you want to do it, but you're not doing it.
Yeah. It's like just a simple thing of messaging somebody, sending an email, and you go, oh yeah. I've had, conversations with my wife, and she'll go, just drop them a line and just say blah, blah, blah. And I'll go, yeah, cool, I will. Got my phone in my hand.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why am I not doing it right now? And I can't physically do it. I'm like, just go, hey, how you doing? Just letting you know, blah, 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 blah. And
I used to, I used to sit, and that's something that's good about the diagnosis, because it solved a lot of weird mysteries that I had about myself that weren't like, oh, you know, why am I compelled to be fully nocturnal or something dramatic, but like just little private things that only really worried me.
Yeah.
Because I managed to function okay otherwise. But privately I would go, well, why can't I just do that? Why can't I just have a fucking routine? Or why can't I just do this very simple thing right now? I have half an hour.
Yeah.
Why can't I do it? I want to do it. I'm feeling bad for not doing it now in the time I could be doing it.
Yeah.
And I just don't do it. And I would sit and go, but that's mental, because there's not even a reason for that. I'm not even enjoying myself. Like, I'm not even being lazy. I'm hating every second of this. Yeah, and I can't do it.
Yeah. I've had it. I've realized the reason I prefer working in the evening or during the night. And I said this to my ex as well, because she had a similar thing. I think there's just more pressure during the day. People are there and you can message them and go, right, now, and there's an immediate back and forth that you're going to get involved in. Whereas in the evening, the chances are they're not around, or people have gone home from work. So there's not as much pressure, and you can send the email in your own time. They'll get it in the morning or whenever.
This is it. And there's no none of that life terror.
Yeah, life terror. That's exactly it.
But I would have it to the point where, like, if I had, like, you know, you get a bunch of laundry from the laundry basket and you like carry it down a corridor to the fucking washing machine.
Yeah.
And I would like a sock would fall off when I was carrying it. Yeah. I would just look at the floor and just go, And I would just keep going.
Yeah.
Like, I would just drop things and not pick them up. And it's just like, pick it up immediately, obviously.
Yeah.
And I only started doing that as, like, an adult, like, a late, like, way too late in your life, considering how, not even, like, childishly simple it is, like, animal level obvious. Insane. But so that sort of thing worried me, because I know that's not right. And I would sit and I would think, well, I know that's not right, but I'm damned if I even know what to Google. Why don't I do things? It's too vague.
Yeah. Why am I not picking up my socks?
Why don't I pick up my socks when I should pick them up in that? Yeah, just nothing to Google. And then I was doing other stuff. Like, you know, I did pretty well at school and I did things and I did other stuff. It wasn't like my life wasn't a smoldering ruin.
No.
So I was sort of like, well, maybe this is just the combo. maybe I can remember all this history stuff, but I can't pick up socks. Maybe that's the deal.
I think that's it with people. You start to compare yourself to, like, proper, like, you know, like, academics and professors and genius people that, you know, they go like that, like the person that discovered penicillin, you know, like, because he didn't do the washing up, you know, like.
Exactly. Yeah. And you just go, well, that's probably something like
same,
that
same.
Yeah, well, I'm the same as I'm the same as that guy, but with socks. And my emails.
You discovered the cure for athlete's foot because you didn't pick your socks up.
Exactly, yeah. And it fixed itself, thank God. But the and then I learned a word I'd never even heard of when I was doing research, and it's alexithymia.
Wow, I've never heard of that. What's that?
Yeah, I'd never heard of it. No. And it's basically when your body mind combo, whatever, isn't very good at understanding your own signals. So that includes not just obvious stuff like, am I thirsty, but also like, how annoyed am I about this? Or am I happy about this? Like, it just takes you a second. Or in some cases, it takes you a very long time, and it can vary in severity. But I've got that a little bit. So I remember when I was a kid, I would get so focused on stuff that I wouldn't drink any drinks for the whole day. Like,
oh, wow.
I'd get to like 5 o'clock and I'd be like, why do I feel insane? It's like, because you haven't had any liquid if you include sleep, like fucking 20 hours. Like, that's why you feel insane. Like, drink something. And I'd sort of wouldn't occur to me.
Yeah.
Or it wouldn't seem obvious. And then I also get it for if I'm annoyed about something. So if something offends me or annoys me, I'll sort of get a kind of blurry gauge of it at the time. But it could take me a day or two to really exactly know how annoyed I am about it.
Yeah.
So it'll only be like 2 days later where I'll be like, no, I am actually annoyed about that. I thought I was maybe not, but actually, no, I am. And then sometimes I'm not. I have to wait.
I've had it where sometimes I'll fly off the handle. Something's pissed me off and I'll go immediately, fuck, why the fuck? Why are we doing that? But then there's other times where I have to say to myself, I have the conversation in my head going, that should piss you off. You should say something.
Yeah.
It's weird how that goes like that. You know, kind of like telling yourself, like, now you are annoyed.
It just sort of filters through to me, yeah. I sort of go, no, actually, that is bad. I don't like that.
Yeah.
But then it makes, if you don't have an explanation or like a nice word, like alexithymia to say, then you just look like a penis. You just look like the guy who said everything was fine and then 2 days later said, actually, it's not fine and I've been lying the whole time.
And by then it's gone. The moment's gone and everyone's like, what
just,
are you on about?
Now you're just dredging up old shit. So it's lose-lose at that point.
Come
so then
storming
you
back into the room 2 days later. Actually.
Yes, and then you get to that level where you then, because you know that just keeps happening, that trains you to just be like, oh, fucking whatever. And then you just don't say anything. Because you just think, well, by the time I even know what I think, it's going to be too late for the normals. So I'll just fucking sit on it.
But it's that, isn't it? Now you're kind of I'm analyzing, like you said, being in touch with your feelings and knowing exactly what they are.
Yeah.
Like that, realizing the difference between anxiety and excitement, very similar. And I was always, oh God, am I, oof, that's, I think that's worrying me a bit. Because actually I was excited that the thing was about to happen. I was about to do a thing. It's just that understanding these things, being a bit more in touch with these things, which I've never had to do before.
Yeah, it's not easy. No. It's very difficult to do without some kind of, because it's not like there's a picture you can compare it to, where if you sort of go, oh, you know, like you do in your mind, where you go, well, am I looking at an apple? I will compare it in my mind to every other apple I've ever seen.
Yeah.
In pictures and in life. But if it's a feeling and you can't feel anyone else's feelings, you only have your own as reference points, then, you know, what are you even comparing it to? So you have to kind of figure out a way to reestablish your baseline, like you're a fucking Blade Runner robot.
A replicant.
You know, if you're a replicant, exactly, yeah, then you go, oh, my idea of what anxiety is a bit off. I'll reestablish my baseline and try and take into account excitement.
Would you find that, though? Because like we sort of brushed over it back then, but because you always strike me as being, you know, well-read, an academic, you know, you do research things like that.
But I'm a big nerd.
You're a big nerd, mate, is what you are. And
yeah.
Yeah. And it's now, do you find it like, do you sort of once the diagnosis was made and all that, you went into this mad like research.
Yeah.
Just went off on one, researching all about it, finding out every aspect of it. Do you find that you do that anyway? Do you do that anyway? Do you seem to me someone that would go, oh, I've never heard of that before. I'm going to read everything on it.
Completely, yeah. Totally compulsively. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Like, it bugs me if I don't know at least a little bit about whatever is around. Yeah, massively so. I'm still doing fucking reading now. There's a lot to read about it. I've done the basic reading and I've read Tony Atwood's book and Fern's book and stuff like that. It's very interesting because you can go through these books and on one bit of the page, the guy's saying something and you're like, wow, that's like a thought that only I thought I had.
Yes.
That's like a page out of my diary. And then further down the page, you're like, nah. No, I don't know what you mean by that.
Yeah.
I'm not into that. Yeah, it's quite weird. So it's patchy, but yeah, I'm a massively obsessive person with regards to research and looking stuff up and obsessive behavior is part of it anyway. So
yeah, and it, like you said with that example just then, it's like that bit you go, that's absolutely me to a T, and then the next bit, that's not me, and then that like you said, that means it just underlines how more fluid human beings are. It, like you said earlier, it's not so rigid. It's like, there's a bit of that and there's a bit of that, and that makes this so this is my version of it.
Yeah, and we're not even sure necessarily why that is. I mean, we don't know enough about the brain or the way that these conditions work to be able to say why I don't have any texture issues with clothes and someone else does, or you know, it, we're getting there. Science will be able to explain it at some point, but it's unusual, because there's just no real reason why necessarily. And that's one of the reasons why people don't understand that they have it. And that's why it took me so long, because I was looking at that and I was going, oh, it must work the same way as finding out if you have fucking measles or something. Like, you need all five symptoms to, you know. And it's like, no, you just need like three.
Yeah. And you've got a lot of this, you've got a lot of that and a lot of that.
Yeah.
So now that means this is what, that combined means you have this.
Totally. And also a lot of the people who you read about what it's like for them, the reason you're reading about them is because they're more profound or whatever. They're more profoundly along the spectrum. I don't know if you're allowed to say more severe. They have a harder time, whatever. But you look at it and you go, oh, I'm not like that.
Yes.
You know, I don't need a carer, so I can't have that. And you go, no, you, like, most people don't. It's just a few people who do need like a, you know, live-in help or something, or someone who comes around. Like, that is a thing, but it's not the majority of the...
No.
Especially now that they've folded Asperger's into autism completely.
Right, right, right.
So there is a danger now that people are going to start to think, oh, autism is either way milder than I thought, or these people are just pretending, because I know autism and that's very severe. And it's like, no, it's rebranded.
Well, nobody knew about autism until Rain Man, until that came along.
Yeah, exactly,
my generation were like, oh, that's because I remember when I met the mother of my kids, we met at a family barbecue in 1991. And the reason we got chatting is because I said, so what do you do? And she said, oh, I look after autistic adults. And the only reference I had, and I went, oh, Rain Man. And because I knew that, she was like, oh, we should have kids.
Because in the early 90s, that was like the most progressive research you could do. Like, yeah. This guy gets it. He's at least seen Rain Man.
He's at least seen Rain Man. So he's a bit different to the other thugs.
These guys are still getting confused between schizophrenia and autism and Down syndrome. And they don't even know what any of those are. But this guy's seen Rain Man. He's got some of the vocabulary down.
So these are the genes I want to get involved with. He's seen Rain Man. Yeah, that's what that was the level we were working on back then. And now...
Well, that's the thing. You
know, yeah.
I think Rain Man is less offensive than fucking Big Bang Theory.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, it's not offensive, but like the idea that fucking Sheldon from Big Bang Theory is like your guy. He doesn't even have it as well, the actor. He's just doing a very good impression of a very particular type of... person. But yes, it's who is there? There's, in terms of public figures, Greta Thunberg, Elon Musk. They think Einstein.
Oh, really?
They're not sure though. You have to kind of reconstruct it in hindsight based on whatever their diaries say. Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, really?
Maybe. I know, yeah. Old Hopkins is one of us. Yeah, there's a few more.
Yeah.
Oh, the Ghostbusters guy, the vodka guy.
Oh, Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure. Let me just Google that in case I've lost my fucking mind.
We don't want Dan Aykroyd getting in touch. Hey, what's the meaning of this? That's my impression.
How dare you? Yes, he is, yeah.
Right. Oh, man. And that was the thing as well, spectrum. Someone was talking about, oh, yeah, you know, when they used to say there was that term, you know, oh, he's on the spectrum. You go, yeah, we all are. Yeah. That's the part of a spectrum. We're all on it, surely.
Well, we're all on it.
Yeah.
But the thing I didn't realize, I used to think of the spectrum as like a petrol gauge, you know, like 0 to 100 of petrol or speed or something. But it's actually more like... you know when you pick like a color in Photoshop?
Yeah.
And it's actually like a square of colors.
Yes, and it all kind of merges from one to the other.
So it's more like dots placed at random on that gradient in a square. So the spectrum generally refers more to like once you're kind of in the gang a bit, the wide spectrum means that you can have texture issues and nothing to do with routine, or entirely routine-based autism and nothing to do with textures, and it more means there's no one-size-fits-all autism or whatever the spectrum you're talking about in that sense. But because autism is so variable, that's why you have to use this massive spectrum of unusual quote-unquote behaviors. And like I said, like you could be like nosing on there with like a score of 30. 40, 50 out of 240 instead of 60. And it depends. It depends. It's fuzzy. These are imperfect tools. And it's really hard to measure people en masse. You just have to kind of go guy by guy, so to speak.
Yeah. I didn't realize that. That absolutely makes more sense. Of course, I was the same. It was like there's the beginning and there's the end. And you kind of, you're on there somewhere.
He's got a full tank of autism, this guy. He's got a full premium, petrol tank.
Premium grade.
Yeah. He'll be good for a while with that tank.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, he's good to go. He's got good mileage. He'll get good mileage out of that.
Yeah.
I was talking to a friend of mine, and she's autistic, and we had the conversation of, Because when I was first talking to her and talking about it, and I was saying that, you're a person with autism, and then she was like, no, I'm an autistic adult, like putting the autism first.
Yeah.
And I thought that was, surely that's putting, the person should come first before the autism.
I've seen some online debate about this. The thing with like a lot of these mental health discussions, and I'm sure you found this, is that people get put off because you look online and there's all these fucking debates between people whose whole thing is debating this stuff. And it makes you go, I don't want to get fucking involved in this, whatever. Yeah. Like it seems unpleasant. And I've seen a little bit of that, but the if I'm right, I'm trying to remember what I have seen Fern saying to people who are being annoying under her comments or on Instagram. That thing, saying person with autism, is called person first language, I think.
Okay.
And it is preferred in some circumstances, but I think the logic with autism is that the new idea now is to say that it's not like a bad thing to have automatically. It's a neurotype, you know, it's just a type of brain, not like a bad brain.
No.
So it's not like leprosy. It's like just a type of person.
Type of person. Yes.
Yeah. So you sort of like, I guess they think that saying person with autism implies like afflicted by. It's also incurable. So there's no point treating it like it's curable. you're stuck forever. So I guess they're saying like, no, you use the thing first just as a descriptor because it is who you are, like very, very inherently. I'm kind of paraphrasing here.
That's what my friend said. She said the same thing. It's like, no, that's what I am. So I haven't got a thing. I am that. That's what I am. I am that person.
It's what's looking out from behind my eyes is the thing. Yeah.
Yes.
Which is quite a weird thing when you do the research, when you get your diagnosis and you sort of go, oh, like these, like I can't change my eyeballs. Like I can change my glasses, but I can't change my fucking eyes. Oh, Jesus.
But it comes from a good place. And me just, being, there's a little bit of misunderstanding there, but my intent was, I'm trying to. I thought you put the emphasis on the person rather than the thing.
Totally.
Yeah. Which.
I think like it's so rare that there is anything other than good intentions that I don't really have much time for people who use that as a reason to get upset at someone, because you just think, well, how likely do you think it is that someone who's bothering to think about their language is trying to cunt you off, like just be reasonable here. There is like a 1 in 100 chance, but come on, just presume good intent and then say something and then find out. Cause obviously if they react by going, well, fuck you, you lunatic, then they don't like you very much.
And they were being disparaging and they were.
Yeah, exactly. Get back to the casino, you fucking weirdo, whatever. Yeah, then you know.
Yes.
But if they just go, oh, okay, then fine then. There's no reason to use some of the dramatic language you sometimes see on social media.
I think that was it. And we were just chatting, two friends chatting, and I was like, oh. And then I was like, oh, but surely, and we just had a back and forth and nobody got annoyed. Nobody got upset. And at the end of it, I'm like, oh, yeah, that makes more sense now. And again, having this conversation with you, I'm like, absolutely. That just underlines and reiterates what my other friend said. You go, okay, now I've got a better understanding of it.
Yeah.
More so.
And it's unreasonable to think, like, if some, neuroscientist or psychologist or whatever comes up with a new term for something in some university, and it's a technical term and it's in an academic paper, what, you expect a guy in the pub to just know that? I mean, it's not his whole life. He's got his own fucking life. Like, it's unreasonable to expect technical terms from one academic or one department in one university in a different country to bleed through to, what, your social circle. That's an insane expectation,
Yeah. But that, again, this is why there are so many arguments, because there's an assumption that everybody knows all of the things. And then there's that thing, well, if you don't know, you should go and look it up. You go, yeah, but if I don't know to look it up,
yeah, exactly.
My intentions are not to be cunty to everybody, but I'm just getting it wrong now and again.
Yeah, and of course, I didn't know that it changed or was new information because I'm not involved in it and I don't spend my life looking it up. And obviously you do because it's relevant to you. I look up the stuff relevant to me.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just going about my business. I'm trying to pay my bills. I'm trying to make sure the family's provided for or whatever.
Yeah, I'm blind. I know all the blind terminology that you're supposed to say. I know that you're supposed to say... hang on. No, I learned one the other day. You're not supposed to say visually impaired. You're supposed to say something else.
Yeah.
Shit. What is it?
Just shit.
Just fuck. Anyway, I said the one you're not supposed to say.
And it was like, actually.
Yeah.
All right.
I heard it on a podcast and someone said, oh, I shouldn't say that. I should say this other thing. And maybe like visual impairment or something like that.
Right. And it's always, and these things change all the time. The more information we get, the more conversations we have, the more we kind of go, oh, okay. But it changes so rapidly. You're not going to be able to keep up with all of it. And sometimes you're going to say the wrong thing, you know, but I'm not getting, anyone listening, this is not a middle-aged straight white dude going, no, you can't say anything anymore. It used to be back in my days. And I'm not saying that. It's just that it changes a lot. And very rapidly at the minute, because we're still finding out. This is the first kind of proper. This is the first generation where we've really gone into it.
Like, it's all happening. Like, people should be pleased that it's happening like this, because you wanted a world where people take language seriously and are concerned about language, and you've got it. Like, mission achieved.
Yeah.
Okay. Your producer says, you say a person who is blind or a person with vision impairment. That's it. Vision impaired, not visually, because visually is how they look, or low vision.
Oh, yes, man.
A person who is blind, a person with vision impairment or low vision. There you go. But then that's never going to filter into a pub level chat, because it would make you sound like you thought you were being recorded.
Oh, and then you've got your mates going, what the fuck's going on with you, John?
Just go, what?
Yeah, all right, mate.
That was like a whole little speech there.
Yeah, it's all like, right. What? We're just, all right, mate. What, you've been reading, have you?
Yeah, but if you're at the pub with a blind guy, fair enough.
Yeah, and then he can tell
you. If you and me go for a drink with Chris McCausland.
Yeah.
See what he reckons about it.
And that's when that is absolutely when it would come up. But apart from that, you're not gonna have those conversations. And not because you don't give a shit. It's just not in your
sometimes
universe.
Yeah, sometimes language is about ease of communication and clarity rather than accuracy in the academic sense. It's just about getting your meaning across. But yeah, I mean, there's loads of that I'm learning, and some of it I'm learning and I'm accepting, and some of it I'm learning. And, you know, personally, I'm sort of going, nah, I don't really care about that. I don't really mind.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I'm in a lucky position in the sense that, like, inherently, I can't be having that bad a time given that I muddled along till I was 31.
Yes.
Although some people muddle along having an awful fucking time and get their diagnosis at like 60. It's just that they've had an awful time the whole time. So, you know, fair enough. It could go that way.
Yeah, I think. But what did you find? Because it was after I saw your show, and you and I don't hang around all the time, but so I wouldn't have known before the show. And then having seen this show, did you have a lot of people come up to you after and go, I had no idea?
I've had some people say that. I've had some people also say like, oh, yeah, that makes sense, you know.
Yeah. Well, there was a bit of that.
Yeah. I've had quite a few people and members of the public too going, oh, shit, is that? Because that's what I'm like.
Yeah.
I've had... could be double figures by now, numbers of people, and it's all guys who've been fine till now in their sort of 30s going, yeah, things, differences have become clearer and clearer over time, or some of the stuff you said is exactly how I think, or things like that.
Yeah.
The guys have been going under the radar, because they reckon, in terms of the actual stats, it's like only just 1% of the population, maybe. Right. But they reckon it could be like 5.
Wow. Yeah.
But it's just people not looking into it, or
or not understanding how different their thoughts are.
But that's it. It's that growing up, you were just, I've said this to you before, I'm sure, but I was never very academic growing up. So at school, I really struggled at school because I wasn't interested in any of it. And so I was always in the lower sets. And so because I was in the lower sets, you were just treated differently. And they'd just go, well, you're not very intelligent. And I think it's Dane Baptiste when he was on, and he said, no, it's just a different way. You've got a different intellect. It doesn't mean you're stupid just because you don't follow that particular system. It just means you think differently. And I just wasn't interested. And like I say, not academics, I wasn't interested. But
also, like, even if you weren't interested in some bits of academia, you're not going to get fucking interested by them just going, okay, you guys are done. Yeah. So we're just going to not bother with you guys anymore. Whereas in reality, what you probably needed was a more imaginative approach from them, not a less, because the kids in the top set, they're on board already. They're fucking doing it.
Yeah.
Not that you should just leave them to their own devices, but, you know, like, and I know teaching is hard and everyone's very overworked, but still, it's, you'd like to think teachers don't just look at kids and go, ah, that guy's fucked. Let's abandon him completely.
And I mentioned there before on here, I can remember the teachers that did actually go, actually, there's a bit more to Rich than meets the eye. There was Miss Sinclair when I was in junior school, and she helped me to read. And she really spent time with me, and she said, "Oh yeah, there's something else going on with Rich. He's just coming at it from a different angle." I remember that. And then there was Miss Stevens when I was in the secondary school, and I was in the bottom set, and she said, "No, Rich gets it. It's just that he comes at it. He gets it in a different way. And so what we need to do, rather than just shoving him down and away, we need to bring him up a bit more." And she did. She got me up into the middle sets for maths, and so that really. And so I do remember. There were certain teachers that went, no, this is just a different angle to everyone else.
Well, they were the ones, you know, doing the job, really.
Yeah,
That's the job. The job isn't to just let some fucking lunatic smart kid just do what he would do on his own and just kind of watch him, make sure no one punches him in the back of the head too much. That's not teaching. That's just a weird kid doing like a rocket, you can light the fuse and just point it, you know.
That's it. Yeah.
That's not teaching. That's just letting nature run its course for a nerd.
But it's that, isn't it? It's like you say, it's easier to focus on the ones that are doing it rather than the ones that need a bit more guidance and a bit more time, especially when they don't, a lot of teachers, as you say, overworked, they have too many kids in the class. They're not getting paid enough. So there's that that's affecting them as well. Not that they don't want to do the job. It's just that when they got into the job, they didn't imagine that the outside stresses would cause so many problems for them.
Yeah. I mean, I was bad at primary school for a lot of it. The school didn't think I could read, but I just wasn't showing them that I could read because they'd hand out tests. But no one ever sat and explained to me what a test was really for.
Right.
Like, why am I... But I know about this. I don't need to, you know. Why do I need to show you that I can read the thing? I read the thing yesterday. Why is today any different? You know, it doesn't make any sense. So I just wouldn't do them. So I'd get like 0 or like 1% or something on tests, and they'd go, his brain is full of worms. You know?
Rather than you've seen it, you've come at it with an extremely logical view and gone, this is pointless.
Yeah, just go, but what do you mean? You are my teacher. You know I know this. Why are you pretending you don't through this piece of paper? It doesn't make any fucking sense. You know I know.
Yeah.
I always have to do this dance. Yeah.
I always felt that. It was always with school. I was like, I don't know if any of this makes... None of this matters. It's like, you know, it's like they... Again, I think I've said this before, and they'd be telling me about the Normans when the Normans invaded us, and you're like, that was ages ago. It's not like they're explaining why society, there's certain things in our society now because of that, because of outside influences. That's why they were telling us. But at the time,
it's hard to make that feel relevant when you're like at fucking 11, though.
Yeah. And you know, if you'd have just said to me, well, that's why our language is the way it is, and we've got certain words that came from the Saxons, and they came from this and that, and that's why... Whereas I was just like, this is just old shit, and I don't care. I'm just looking at the... you know.
I think there should be some system where, like, because especially in comedy, we know a lot of people who they left formal education early or earlier than you might have expected when you talk to them, but they just taught themselves a lot of stuff. They just got interested in stuff organically.
Yeah.
And I do feel like for some people, they're so energetic or so interested in more immediate stuff, especially when they're young. They should almost be allowed to go away and do something real and then just go back and finish. Like, just go back and do it when you sort of, you've gotten it out of your system and you've gone, yeah, fuck the Normans. I don't give a shit. I want to make a bit of money and learn like one or two of the subjects that I think are good and ignore the other ones. And then when I'm maybe what, 25, I'd be like, actually, I like history now. I think history is pretty good. Then go back and do it.
I'm far more interested in things now. Like you say, cause I'm doing it under my own steam. I'm like, okay, let's find out. Let's have a look at this.
That's me in that's me in PE. It's just like, why am I stretching? What do you mean stretching? It doesn't make it. This is point. I hate stretching and I think it's pointless and I hate running and it's all bullshit and you're either fit or you're not. And there's no point in trying any of this. And now I'm way into it. And I wish I'd been into it at school because I'd be in such better health now, but I just wasn't. I just thought, fuck you. I'm not going to take this seriously. I'm going to.
It was always like, you know, I'll be leaning back on my chair and then they'd tell you the story of the kid that died because they said that. I'm like, tell me that. Tell me more about that. I want to know about what happened. Why? Oh, we were doing javelin. And they go, there was a kid one year that got his eye poked out. You're like, really? I want to hear about that. I want to hear about that. How does that work? Because then it's like, wouldn't the javelin go straight through the back of his head? Wouldn't it do the thing? And just, tell me about that.
You were interested in A&E.
Yeah, I was. I was just more interested in like, why? Fuck, what happened to the person?
Yeah. Human interest in medicine.
I was like, are they all right? Are they still alive? What happened?
Did they reattach his fucking arm?
Yeah.
How? That's medicine. Yeah. That's surgery.
Maybe there was something wrong with me because I really got interested in the Ferdinand Magellan or Magellan story, the explorer that went off.
Oh, really?
He went off. I think he was from Portugal and he went off and found this island and got eaten by the inhabitants. Something like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's something I can get into.
If you eat human brain and spine, you can get a disease.
Can you?
Yeah, I think it's called kuru.
Oh, is that why Hannibal Lecter cooked it first?
Yeah. it's only in the, it's kind of like, you get it from prions, from your nervous, it gets into your nervous system,
Oh,
the transmission is cannibalism, but it's eating the especially the brain. You really shouldn't eat the brain.
And is that with any species or just human brain?
Just humans, I think. It's a disease that like only used to happen in one group of people in Papua New Guinea. But yeah, that kind of stuff's very interesting.
Yeah.
Much more so than quadratic equations.
See, every time I speak to you, I learn something else. This is why you may not be academic yourself, but it's good to have a friend that is. And then they can learn all the things. And then they could. I've got a friend of mine, Andrew Roper. I don't know if you've ever met him, Australian comic. And he's a scientist and he's now a lecturer. And he would tell me, like, he explained to me quantum mechanics in a way that I would understand. So he'd go, well, you know, like this. And I go, oh, yeah. And he'd break, he goes, it's like, and I'm like, I get it. And then there's that famous phrase that, you know, if you say you understand quantum physics, then you don't understand quantum physics. And I use that everywhere. People go, that sounds like you know what you're talking about.
That's it, it makes you sound cleverer for going like, it's impossible to fucking find out.
You'll never know. But just by shining the light on it already changes the thing. You'll never see. You'll never be able to see what it is.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm lucky. I feel lucky to be in an industry like this where you generally are surrounded by not just interesting people, but interested people.
Yes.
It's not that common. It's not that common. A friend of mine actually quit their job in an office. I mean, they went to a different office job, but this particular office they worked in, they couldn't stand it because no one there out of the 10 or 15 people they worked with was interested in anything. They just sort of, they weren't unhappy people, but they just had no interest in anything else other than the normal, just kind of day-to-day routine stuff. Yeah. And because he's a bit more like you and me, he just went insane. He just went fucking mad.
Well, there's that,
and hated it.
Yeah. Well, there's that. That is it. What's that film called? Office Space.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And he just goes, I can't fucking do this. And then just it just flips one day.
Case of the Mondays.
This is. But I'm glad that we did this. I'm glad you came back on to have a chat with me, Pierre.
Yeah, me too, man.
It's been so great talking to you, as it always is. You're going to be in Edinburgh.
You bet your ass.
Yeah,
and then the whole fucking thing, all of August, and then a tour around the country and Dublin in autumn.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Oh, lovely. So we'll put all the links up. And where can we find you on the socials for anyone that hasn't listened to you on here before?
I'm on all the socials. Instagram's probably the best one since Twitter's falling apart. But either way, you know.
Excellent.
Yeah, and then you can watch my YouTube special of my comedy on YouTube, but there's links to that everywhere. You'll see that.
Excellent. Pierre, thank you so much, mate. I'm glad we could do
this. Thanks, man.
It's been lovely. Good luck with Edinburgh. I'm sure I'll see you either up there or around there or wherever. And thanks, mate. It's been an absolute joy. This has been Insane in the Membrane. This has been Pierre Novelli, and I've been Rich Wilson, and we'll see you next time.
Insane in the Membrane.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.